This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Lee Barrett. He's the executive director of an organization called ENAC, and he's in the studio today. Talk about healthcare IT and moving data back and forth and all kinds of ideas. We talked about interoperability last week. We're going to talk about maybe health information and health information management today. But Lee, before we begin, perhaps you can tell the audience a little maybe thumbnail sketch of your background. You've been involved in this for many years, and just give a couple minutes to your background because it's got a kind of interesting background there.
So, John, thanks very much. So I've been involved with the industry, really in healthcare, for probably about 25 years. I've got 10 years in the payer industry. I've got another 10 years of running healthcare consulting organizations like PricewaterhouseCoopers, and there are about four other organizations that I've been involved with, smaller organizations that I've taken in healthcare and grown those organizations, and they were acquired. The last organization was Clarity Corporation, which was acquired by United Healthcare or Ingenix. And I've also been involved back in the 90s. I was involved in 91 with forming, we were talking about the Work Group for Electronic Data Interchange for WEDI. WEDI got formed in 91, and I was working for Travelers at the time.
HHS motivated that, didn't they?
So, yes. And in fact, the individual I worked for, Joe Brophy at Travelers, along with Barney Trusnowski of Blue Cross Blue Shield Association in Chicago, got asked to meet with then Health and Human Services Secretary Louis Sullivan in Washington, and came back. And Joe Brophy said to me, said, Lee, Dr. Sullivan wants us to come up with a report in 6 months on administrative simplification. And I'd like you to lead our effort and coordinate that with Blue Cross Blue Shield Association and put together the coalition. So we did. So we created the two reports, the 92 and the 93 report to Dr. Sullivan.
And 93 was a forming of VHNAC.
And that was when WEDI got formed. In fact, WEDI is currently right now in the process of developing a 2013 report. We just had a meeting last week.
Let me just, for our listeners, some people that are intimately acquainted with this, they know what these terms are. So WEDI is a Work Group Electrical Data Exchange based in Reston, Virginia. Been founded in 1991. You've experience in that. You've experience with health plans, with providers, vendors, different companies, state and local, all up and down the chain, including the federal government. And you work for a company, an organization called ENAC, E-H-N-A-C. And that stands for, why don't you tell our audience?
The Electronic Healthcare Network Accreditation Commission.
So, Electronic Healthcare Network Accreditation Commission. Many of my listeners, when they hear the word accreditation, they go, oh, NIST, that's a security standard, and we're moving to the cloud, and we got to be accredited and certified. Different type of accreditation we're talking about here. We're going to define that in a few minutes. But I just want the listeners to know that, you know, believe it or not, in 2013, you know, this whole healthcare IT business is going to be, you know, ridiculously large. If you look at the Huffington Post, just last month, they had a story, and they said $885 billion is going to be spent in healthcare IT this year. And the federal government is moving in that area and trying to reduce cost. And one way they're trying to reduce cost is by helping people efficiently exchange information. And one way to do that is to use standards and guidance for the best ways to move that information back and forth. And that's the focus here today on healthcare information management, especially with standards, especially with a lot of the terms that some people have been tossed around, HIEs, EHIEs, all kinds of new terms we're going to talk about today. So $800 billion, that's an amazing number, isn't it? It's just fantastic. I can't believe it.
It is an amazing number. And, you know, it is. And in fact, that's why we're trying, when you look at everything from WEDI, administrative simplification, you look at the whole clinical side of this and all the exchange aspects, the accountable care organizations, all the various models that are occurring in the industry. It's really all about the exchange of data. And that's really what we as ENAC, when we were formed back in 93, are all about: exchange of data and validating that the exchange of data is secured.
EHNAC.org for more information. Learn all about the organization, the events they participate in. Learn about Lee, EHNAC.org. You know, we had Dr. Fridsman here about 2 weeks ago, and we talked about interoperability. And that, you know, I guess that's mostly like from electronic health record to another electronic health record. But we're talking about much, much broader subject than that. Is that right?
The answer is yes. We're talking about, and I'm sure Doug was talking about, you know, it's EHR to EHR is certainly interoperability. But you also get into, you got the labs, you've got the pharmacies, you've got providers, the individual providers themselves. So we're all about really focusing on, and we've formed a partnership with directtrust.org to evaluate and to develop an overall accreditation program for securing all these clinical messages that are going to be occurring, whether or not it are lab reports, operating notes, your electronic health record, all these various clinical data that that contains personal health information. The concern is, hey, how is my record going to be disseminated from point A to point B, or on multiple points? So,
and that's what I tell my listeners. I say, well, you know, I'm John Gilroy. If I start up Gilroy's Donuts and I'm messaging back and forth to the factory, who cares? No one could care less. Health records, all kinds of restrictions, HIPAA restrictions, and then there's a layer of the military have to add in here. It's layer upon layer upon layer, and many of the people who work in healthcare IT, they tell me their hands are tied and they don't know which way to go because there's so many restrictions that in other industries they don't have to worry about.
Yeah, well, the whole aspect, and when you talk about HIPAA, you talk about now the HIPAA omnibus rule that was just released back in January. That's really going into compliance. Organizations will need to be compliant with it in September of this year. And you start reading far more in any of the publications about various breaches that are occurring in the industry, and they're talking about thousands and thousands of records. So the concern comes down to right now: how are we going to look to secure this? How are we going to assure not only physicians but the individuals? Because we got as well, John, there are a lot of organizations, a lot of people that have personal health records as well now. And so between the personal health records, electronic health records, all the various clinical data, we're getting into the point as well that at the state, regional, as well as at the federal level, everyone wants to create the analytics to be able to provide the various dashboard views of all this data, the longitudinal views of all this data. And so the only way to do that through these various exchanges is really going to be to secure these messages.
And I think that there are a lot of listeners that know this, but it's pretty apparent it's in almost the major publications, is that so HHS is encouraging people to use electronic health records, and there's some financial motivations there to use electronic health records. The question is, what is an electronic health record, and how is that different from a personal health record? Maybe you can separate that for our audience.
So I think, you know, electronic health record, there's very... In fact, when you come down to major differences, there probably aren't major differences, except the fact that in a personal health record, I have responsibility, or you have responsibility for managing your personal health record and what you put into it. An electronic health record, however, could have a lot more data and could have far more what I would call attachments and different information on lab reports, other types of operating notes. So it's a far more complete record in an electronic health record system, and an electronic health record. So what we're trying to do when you start to look at it is, one, how do we secure all these messages that are going to be exchanged between these various health information exchanges? Two, and ENAC is absolutely involved in looking at this from the privacy, security, confidentiality perspective. And we also look at it from the standpoint, what's the operating environment? Does an organization have the appropriate resources?
Business practice.
The business practices are all part of that review. So it's a very comprehensive review, and it goes beyond just a self-assessment or self-attestation that an organization submits. It also includes a site audit. So we have site auditors that actually go out to validate what the organization actually submits to us. So it's very broad-based, but we feel that organizations are actually looking for a third party, an objective third party, to be reviewing organizations for compliance.
And it's not just a handful of criteria. You must have 80 or 90 pieces of information or groups of information over a long period of time you have to collect.
Absolutely. And it's the other part of this accreditation is it's not just a one time. Organizations have to go through this accreditation every 2 years. So it's a process. It's an ongoing process. And so once an organization does submit all of their information, they then have to go about keeping it up so that they're going to have to go through that reaccreditation every 2 years.
If you'd like to get more information, you can go to ehnac.org. We're going to have to take a break. We come back, we're going to do a little compare and contrast. We're going to talk about health information exchanges and health insurance exchanges and what the differences are, and talk more about some of the specifics involved in exchanging highly valuable and secure information. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Lee Barrett. He's the Executive Director of ENAC. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Lee Barrett, Executive Director of an organization called ENAC, and they work with different types of healthcare information and exchanging it safely and securely to make sure that, you know, if you're in an accident in Tulsa, I guess the problem is, so I'm driving through Tulsa, I get in an accident, and I'm in the emergency room, and they want to know, was this guy diabetic? What's his problem? I mean, if a healthcare record was available to them, sure, it would make life easier for people all over the United States. And talking about this whole idea of exchanging information securely and going back and forth. In the first block, we had all kinds of acronyms that were tossed out there and thrown out there. One is called HIE, Health Information Exchange. I think it's frequently confused with an HIE, Health Insurance Exchange. Maybe for me and our listeners, you can maybe separate those two for us, Lee.
So, John, I think the differences between the two, you've got a health information exchange is really about the dissemination of information and clinical, primarily clinical as well as administrative information between a variety of healthcare stakeholders. It can be between payers, providers, labs, pharmacies, a number of these organizations in which, again, all this information is being exchanged. So the HIE has really got responsibility for utilizing various standards and securing the messaging between all these various stakeholders.
Different software, different places.
Different software, different places.
Got it.
Look at a health insurance exchange. The health insurance exchanges are basically have been established, really, in many of the states now have these health insurance exchanges. They're gearing up such that this year, in 2013, they will be in position to offer to a variety of really stakeholders within a particular state various options regarding insurance plans in an effort to, and this is all part of the Affordable Health Care Act, so that a variety, each of these can perhaps get coverage, health care coverage, basically based upon at a group rate.
So it's more of a marketplace.
It's far more of an insurance marketplace for small businesses and for individuals to be able to get
healthcare
insurance.
So the health information exchange is different software, different places. The insurance exchange is a marketplace.
It's all about insurance plan, plan marketplace.
It sure sounds alike, though. It's confusing.
Oh, they are. And in fact, the same term, HIE acronym is being used.
So you've been in this business 20 years, way, way, way before the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And in 2010, they suggested that health information exchanges get started up. That must have been music to your ears because you must have been preaching this for decades and pounding the table. And finally, the federal government says, yeah, this is important to be able to set up ways to exchange medical information.
Well, absolutely. And I think this goes back even to the 90s when I was involved with X12N, another acronym, the Accredited Standards Committee. X12N was founded in 91. And the vision that I had at that time and for the committee was really to develop a singular set of EDI, electronic data interchange transactions, for the healthcare industry. So we did that. We embarked on that, and it took us 6 years to get those transactions, and they became adopted as part of HIPAA. Now, we tried to get those transactions implemented in the industry on a volunteer basis. Wasn't going to happen. So unless there was legislation that mandated it, it wasn't going to occur for the industry. So HIPAA came along, and we're still in the process now of really implementing a lot of those transactions. But those transactions now are very much a part of the exchange side. And you start to look at the clearinghouses, the electronic healthcare networks, that are really exchanging a lot of the, I'll call the administrative data. So all of the claims, all of the eligibility, the referrals, the authorizations are all taking place through these electronic healthcare networks or clearinghouses in the industry, which is why we started in 93 to really develop an accreditation program for those organizations and to focus primarily on privacy, security, confidentiality.
Companies like LexisNexis focus on fraud and duplicate billing. And, well, how can you have duplicate billing unless you know the Lee Barrett in Tennessee is the same one as in Maine? I mean, I think this is very important to you have to know who the players are before you can know who's defrauding who of what.
So that's absolutely a very good point. But also a key point of what we're trying to do out of really the health information exchanges and what we're trying to do to build the nationwide health information network. So if you look at NWIN and the what they're trying to do with building this vision of connectivity between all the various healthcare stakeholders in this country and getting to the point of securing all the messaging between all those various players, it really is going to come down to how do we look to do that effectively? How do we look to secure it all and secure that data and to assure that every one of, whether it's a patient at the patient level or at the lab level or the hospital level, that information is secured throughout. So
NWIN's got two N's in there, right? NNWN, is that acronym?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a fool. Some people listening know what that means, but it's as long as you have an idea of what we're talking about here.
Another acronym, John.
Yeah, another one, yeah. Let's get away from acronyms and talk about something called meaningful use. Now, you talked about health information exchanges. You know, when I think of meaningful use, I think of electronic health records, health information exchanges, and then some kind of clinical information, kind of the three pillars of that meaningful use. It integrates directly with electronic health. I mean, it's meaningful use. I mean, it's part and parcel of it. In order to comply, you have to have this information exchange, don't you?
Right. So you've got to have a health information exchange that's part of it. You've got to be able to secure the messaging. In fact, so the direct project, which was formed by the Office of the National Coordinator, really focused on creating this secure messaging as part of meaningful use. And we're into meaningful use stage one right now, heading towards meaningful use stage two, which is in January 2014. As a result of that, meaningful use stage two also mandates that any of the messages that are going to be sent between the various exchanges or these health information service providers and exchanges are going to have to be secured using the direct protocol. So that's really the ONC has come out with that. That's all part of meaningful use stage two. And so the fact that ONC awarded last week an award to directtrust.org and to ENAC as well as the New York eHealth Collaborative, really it's the ENAC as well as directtrust.org, we developed this program called Direct Trusted Agent Accreditation Program. So that's really, this accreditation program incorporates and really focuses on these health information service providers that are all part of the kind of the exchange side of this, certificate authorities, as well as registration authorities. All of this has to do with really an accreditation program focusing on implementation of the secure messaging across the industry.
So would Kaiser Permanente call you up and say, send some evaluators out to make sure we're complying with this, and that's what the accreditation is all about? Is that in a thumbnail, in a nutshell?
So a Kaiser absolutely could be an organization that's going to be exchanging information with various players. They are absolutely a premier organization today. They're involved with a lot of clinical data, and they really have various exchanges that they're involved with. A lot of payers also have various exchanges, including many are involved with accountable care organizations and setting those up with the providers in various communities. So all of this is about the exchange and these organizations that are out there, these health information service providers, or HISPs, another acronym, really have the responsibility for developing what's called a certificate, be the certificate authority, and to register the certificates and be able to provide the capability to really create an electronic signature and to authenticate that if I'm sending information to you, John, that I can send information to you, and that there's a trust anchor that's set up between our two organizations for us to be able to submit information. So all of this is really about creating these trust environments, trust anchors, and securing all the data between all the various exchanges.
You know, from an outside perspective, I'd look at this and say, well, for the last 20 years, you've been setting the stage for this transition. I wrote down gestation as you were speaking, and it's been sitting there. Then 2010, with the ACA comes and really starts twisting arms and going up to doctors going, hey, you want some money, you're going to have to comply with this. It seems like the stage was set for you to walk in and go, hi, I'm the answer.
I'd like to say that there was some thought to how this would play out. It's taken a long time. We started this back in 91 with the EDI transactions. We're still in the process of trying to get all these EDI transactions implemented. For example, we're still working on getting electronic funds transfer, electronic remittance advices out there and implemented. It's happening. I think that with the government involvement with ONC and the incentives, especially to the providers and to the industry on implementing electronic health records, that's gone a long way.
Incentives means money, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to have to take a break and pay for this time with some commercials. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Going to take a break. Come back with Lee Barrett, Executive Director of ENAC. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio of Lee Barrett, Executive Director of ENAC. For more information, you can go to the website ehnac.org. We're talking about exchanging electronically information about you, going to a doctor, going to a hospital, going to a reference lab, or maybe going back and forth to a reference lab. And we used our quota for acronyms here. So let's not talk about acronyms. Let's use a simple phrase. Let's talk about blue button. Hey, it's not an acronym, finally. So there's something out there called the blue button. And earlier we mentioned personal health records. We compared it to electronic health records. That's a simple little toss. But tell us about blue record and how it fits in with this idea of interoperability and exchanging data about health.
So Blue Button was really established, really, it's a by the VA, and there are several other organizations. The Markle Foundation was involved with it, as well as TRICARE, to develop really this fundamental tool to provide the capability for electronic health records, PHR records,
personal health records.
Really, mm-hmm. Personal health records to be assembled. And so there's about hundreds of thousands of users right now of the Blue Button, and they've established it as a tool as well that organizations can use. And really what it comes down to is being able to have the capability that when I go to a provider, a patient can go in, can actually hit a button, can have a portal capability to be able to get at their information, their PHR. They can maintain certain parts of that as well. So the patient becomes far more engaged, far more involved, and along with all the various caregivers for that patient. It's a great tool.
Yeah, and in radio we can say that's the phrase that pays. And you use the phrase that pays, patient engagement. I think that's what the conclusion is. Most of the physicians I have in here say, look, if we can get Billy or Sally involved in managing their own health, all of a sudden costs go down, results are improved, patient engagement, something like a personal health record. People, you know, over at the VA, they have 400,000 people, have a lot of veterans over there. So they came to this test program. They said, well, maybe a couple thousand people may want to be involved in there. The number is 500,000 people are now involved in, you know, their own and making sure their all their records are on file in case something happens to them. It's just an amazing success story.
So if you take the success of Blue Button, and you look at the fact that we've got 500,000 people, which is going to grow dramatically. In fact, there are a lot of many payers and other organizations, a lot of provider hospitals have got portal capabilities or that they provide for patients to be able to either manage their PHR records.
The patient portal.
Patient portal. They can do payment and other types of information. There's going to be a lot more exchange of information even through these portals. And you add the portal now to the exchanges, these health information exchanges, and now you got all the data. You got your data, my data is flowing through these various networks. So this really comes back to meaningful use. It comes back to the whole aspect of privacy, security, and confidentiality.
And how do they exchange that information?
It comes back to how I'm going to authenticate between the various players that I can send information to, that you, John, are going to send information to a lab.
Because legally, you can't just throw that stuff out anywhere.
You can't do it because of HIPAA. And you've got HIPAA rules, the HIPAA regs, and with the new omnibus rule and a lot more requirements around, as well as enforcement around privacy, security, confidentiality, the need is even greater. The penalties are even greater. So it all fits together, especially on the exchange side of the capability, because Blue Button is another, I would call, on-ramp onto the Nationwide Health Information Network here.
So if I decide to start up a healthcare and I call it Gilroy Healthcare, what I would do is I would call you up and say, yeah, we want to be accredited to be able to exchange information with hospitals and doctors. And then what you would do is you would send out evaluators to Gilroy Healthcare, and they would look at privacy, technical things, business practice, resources, security, HIPAA compliance. And they'd put me under a microscope and they'd say, well, you kind of made it except for these two areas. If you fix these areas, we'll approve you for 2 years and I improve my security, let's say. And then in two years, you got to come back and do it all over again just to prove that I'm up with the new policies. We have a new policy just in 2014.
So that's exactly what this is about. And so what, as you got new legislation, and we've seen a lot of legislation, healthcare reform legislation that's come out over the past several years, and it's going to continue to proliferate. And what we do, therefore, you're absolutely right, is to stay on top of any of the new legislation, new healthcare reform legislation. Our process is we have a committee that's constantly monitoring any of the changes, both at a federal and certain state level. We incorporate any of those changes into the criteria that we use to evaluate those organizations. But you're exactly right. We would come out. You would submit a self-assessment on all those areas. We will then go through a site auditor. We'll then review all of those, all that criteria that you've and the evidence that you've provided, and then go out and do the site audit and validate that, in fact, that's the way it is.
And what you personally do is you develop relationships with people like Dr. Fridsman and the people at ONC to keep your pulse on what exactly is going on and what the future is going to bode for this. So what kind of organizations would want to be accredited? Hospitals, doctors, insurance companies, state organizations, HIEs?
So all of the above, John, you named them. I mean, in fact, and so what we've done is we have not gone down the electronic health record path. I will tell you what we are doing. We have created accreditation programs for e-prescribing networks, for clearinghouses, electronic healthcare networks, financial services organizations. In fact, what a lot of people don't understand is that a lot of the banks, financial institutions, have also gotten into...
That's a curveball. Of course, electronic payment. You have to...
Have all gotten into the whole exchange, and they want to be part of the all the dollars that are flowing, especially when you talk about electronic funds transfer, electronic remittance advices between various players. HIEs, certainly the exchanges, the accountable care organizations, payers themselves, as well as, you know, the whole aspect here of looking at managed service organizations and how they're playing a role as well. And then there's a lot of outsourcers. A lot of these organizations, a lot of vendors provide capabilities for data services. A lot of organizations will outsource some of their data services to some of these outsourcers. So we also are accrediting those outsourcers as well to assure they've got a disaster recovery plan, a business continuity plan. So, yes.
So let's get ridiculous again. So I start the Gilroy Bank, and I can accept electronic transfers, and I want to start doing business with Blue Cross Blue Shield. And so Blue Cross Blue Shield goes, well, you got to be accredited. So then I'd call you folks up and say, Lee, send out your team, or you have a group of individuals that come out, and then make sure that I comply with ONC's guidelines, or how does that all?
So how it all works is, so the answer is, many organizations may put, for example, they want to have your organization accredited and send out a request for proposal. And so if you're not accredited, they may say, well, listen, you're not going to be eligible for this RFP because we've looked to set a standard on the types of organizations that we're going to evaluate. Assuming that you're going to go through it, we have all of our information online on our website. So any organization or individual can actually go on and actually see We're very transparent and see all of our criteria, know what each of our programs has. They can prepare for it. They can do their self-evaluation. They then go through, they apply. We then send out all the evidence that that organization we're looking for. The organization submits. They have up to a year to go through the entire accreditation process, including the site audit that the organization goes through.
Fascinating. It's so much information is there, and it's changing so rapidly. And in 2010, when the ACA came through, did that kind of throw a monkey wrench into your plans, or were you prepared for that? Did you expect that to happen?
We were actually fortunately prepared for it. As I said, we've got the organization, and the committees that we have are constantly monitoring what's going on. So whether or not it's high tech or whether or not it's the ACA and how administrative simplification was going to change as far as ACA, we have been monitoring it. We were prepared for it, and we've incorporated all those changes into our criteria. The omnibus rule that just came out in January, we've done the same thing, and we're in the process of incorporating all those changes, so we'll be compliant, and we'll have our criteria be there for any organization who wants to go through, because there's a September timeframe for compliance with the new omnibus rule.
You know, what's interesting is that every one of my listeners sooner or later is going to have to go to a doctor for something. They're going to stub their toe or get a cut or something. And many of my listeners are involved in IT, and some are involved in healthcare IT. So there are different layers. It could be someone at HHS right now working on electronic health who has to go to the doctor tomorrow, and he's going to understand some of this. And I think the generation that's under 30 years old age are going to go to hospital, and they're going to expect, they're going to say, well, what do you mean you don't have electronic? They're almost going to expect it, isn't it? Because it's a transition in generations where they're not going to expect to have a doctor back in Boston with a piece of. They're going to expect, well, of course it's there. That's the way it is.
It's not going to be any different than the way we go to an ATM today. And if you don't get a response within probably 2 or 3 seconds, you're going to go to another one. So yeah. And people are going to be expecting that level of responsiveness.
We're going to take a break and come back, talk more about electronic data exchange, especially focusing on healthcare IT. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Lee Baird, Executive Director of ENAC. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Lee Baird, Executive Director of ENAC. That's ehnac.org. For more information, we're talking about exchanging data, but healthcare data with all the limitations and restrictions with HIPAA that has on that, talking about electronic health records and all kinds of things. You know, many of my listeners listen in the car. Some of them maybe listen online 6 months from now when there's snow on the ground. And some are involved in social media. Do you write a blog? Is there a blog you can recommend for my listeners to maybe read?
So I actually, I do write blogs, and they go in a variety of different publications. But I like I guess I like a couple of blogs that I look at and check on. One is the Pharma Gossip blog.
Ooh, a gossip guy. Okay.
Yeah, and that's Jack Friday, I guess, that writes that one. He has some really good information. The other is the healthcare blog by John Mack. Mm-hmm. Is the other one I look at, and I follow hims. As well as Information Week, I've written for as well. So
good. They're all good.
I try to leverage social media as much as possible.
Good. If you want to find my blog, you go to Google, you type in John Gilroy blog, and I'll be writing about this interview and get a picture of Lee, and everyone can connect the picture with the voice and see what's going on. What about connecting the picture with the Twitter? Do you have a Twitter handle? Do you do much on Twitter?
We've been monitoring Twitter more than anything. I would say that I don't have a Twitter handle, although ENAC does. And so from an ENAC perspective, we do have a Twitter handle. If somebody wants to tweet us on ENAC, we'd be happy to do
at
so.
@EHNAC.
Great.
Well, I've done 309 interviews, Lee, and every one of my guests has to do this 10-question test. Now, listeners are listening going, well, he sounds kind of snide. Is he really a card-carrying nerd or not? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Well, what kind of phone he has? And they think this. So I'm going to ask you these 10 questions, then I'm going to put it through my computer in my basement, find out if you're, in fact, a nerd. Okay, first question. The year you bought your first computer?
1981.
81. Oh, that's points. That's good points. That's kind of early. And year your first cell phone?
My first cell phone was 1985.
Ooh, that was a brick then.
That was a brick.
85. You probably have a big arm because...
I put it in my car.
Yeah. Probably need a car or a truck to drive it around. And, you know, your organization has a Twitter feed, but you don't have a personal Twitter feed.
No.
And you don't have a personal blog. That's negative points. So you're sinking quickly here. What kind of personal backup do you have, Lee?
So I've got using iCloud.
Okay. That's acceptable. What kind of a smartphone do you have?
I have a iPhone 5. So I use the iOS. Mm-hmm.
And how many apps on that little thing?
I probably have over 30 apps.
30? That's reasonable. I normally ask what kind of a tablet device you have, but I have to switch. How many tablet devices and what flavor do you have?
I have actually just the iPad.
Okay.
That I use.
Good. And what social networking sites are you involved in?
Facebook, LinkedIn, as well as... I monitor a number of other sites, but those are the key ones.
Usual suspects. And here's the key one. The last book you read was electronic or paper?
It was electronic, and it was Ben Franklin.
Hmm, yeah. Which one? Stacy Schiff's book about Ben Franklin in Paris?
The Stacy Schiff book.
Oh, it's a wonderful book. I loved it.
Very good.
Yeah, very people know about his life there and John Adams. So I'll have to run this through my computer. You're doing pretty well, but no blog, no Twitter feed. You're probably just semi-nerdy. You're not really a card-carrying nerd, so we'll have to I'll run through my UNIVAC computer in my basement and print it out in my green bar and mail it to you in the U.S. mail. This whole world, $800 billion spent on healthcare IT, electronic health records, doctors. We hear what's going on in the White House and Capitol Hill, and now it's in front page of the newspaper, all this dispute and debate and back and forth, and a lot of nasty things are said about healthcare IT and what's going on here. So I'm going to put you on the spot here, you know? This has been recording for posterity, so 100 years from now, people come back and listen to this. But seriously, where do you think it's headed the next 5 to 10 years? Are people going to actually learn how to get along, like in the schoolyard? Just get along with that guy, Chad Baker. Get along, and maybe good things will happen. Are they going to get along, or are they going to keep this fighting up?
I think people are going to get along. And I do think what's going to occur is prediction is that we are going to have an interconnected environment. We're going to have a interoperable environment. We're going to get away from, I think, having a lot more of the proprietary networks that are out there today. I think we're going to be leveraging as much on standards and trying to standardize how we're communicating between various organizations. I think we're going to address the whole issue of privacy, security, confidentiality, and we will. So I believe that what we're going to have is we're going to have an environment, and I think the NWIN environment is one that is going to become a reality. And I think that all of the various components, whether it's patients and patients being able to and being able to engage patients and having the portal capabilities for patients, PHR capabilities for patients, patients being able to pay their providers electronically. Are all going to be there along with the exchange of both clinical and administrative data between various entities. And I think we're going to get to the point where we're going to reduce mortality fairly dramatically. We're going to have a lot more dashboard and analytics than we've got today. And I really hope that we get to the point where, John, as we were talking, that an individual who is traveling, has a heart attack, goes into an emergency room, and we need to assemble that electronic health record in seconds so that that attending physician can administer treatment quickly. We'll be able to do that in the future, and I think that's going to be very important.
We just talked about a history book, Ben Franklin in Paris. Let's go back to history. Let's go back to 100, 150 years ago with railroads. You know, realize that you know, there was a big fight over the how wide the rail should be. And one railroad would have one form, another have another form, and they kind of figured out, and they standardized on it, and there's all kinds of interoperability that happened 100 years ago between chains. Now, if you remember in history, when Hitler tried to get into Russia, there was different standards there. So I think this world of standards is similar to what's happened in the past, is that there's a lot of fights that go out and a lot of wasted time and wasted effort, but sooner or later, I think there's enough financial incentives here to make people just try to agree with standards. I think standards management may be the whole key to understanding this future of healthcare IT interoperability.
So I think the need to be able to collaborate between various organizations is absolutely critical between all of the various standards organizations. We clearly want to be doing that. We're working with a lot of various organizations to try to make this happen. I do think that there's going to be a need, as we've talked about, for third-party review of various organizations and various stakeholders within healthcare through accreditation, certification. I think that's going to be very important. as well, because I think organizations are going to look for that third-party review.
So how do you manage your standards? Do you get together with WEDI quarterly, annually? Do you work with the ONC? Is HIMSS the place that facilitates this discussion? Or
Variety of areas. All of the above, actually. WEDI is one, is an industry action group. We work with HIMSS. We work with NIST. We work with URAC. We work with the National Quality Assurance Organizations. We work with all of these various organizations that are developing various standards, directtrust.org. So we're monitoring what they're doing. We're engaging them to have dialogue. We're sharing our information. And as I indicated, we make all of our criteria available, is on our website. So it's an open book test for any organization, and any organization can see it. The standards aspects of this, of how we're going to look to move forward, whether it's X12 on administrative simplification or clinical standards, are absolutely going to be critical. We've got to continue to collaborate and move forward so that we don't add more cost and we don't add more redundancy and confusion in the industry, but create an environment really of collaboration so we can continue to move forward to achieve the vision, I think, of this N-win vision that we're all trying to move to.
And that HIMSS is HIMSS. For more information, they can give all kinds of information on different types of standards for health information management, health information exchange. We're going to have to end our interview here, but I'm sure we can go 10 more hours because it's such a deep topic here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's guest was Lee Barrett, Executive Director of EHNAC.org, ENAC. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.